For the last 15 months, every morning, there is a spirit that wakes me up sharp at 6:30. And it says, get out of bed and go in and sit down in the living room and wait. So I get up and put on the coffee pot and sit in the living room with my cell phone turned open to a blank Facebook page, and I wait. And then something begins to speak, and with my fumbling fingers, I simply write what it speaks, and when it's finished, coming through me like a conduit, I press send, and off it goes to the Facebook page. I don't take particular responsibility for it. It just comes, and it is a sacred moment suddenly, and I find myself looking forward to it with some trepidation and with a lot of excitement every morning, a strange early morning visitation that I would not want to miss. And the other morning, sitting there, the thought that crossed my mind was that migrant caravan that is on its way from Latin America, working across 2,000 miles to reach the southern border of the United States. And I've heard that it's a flashpoint and it's becoming ammunition for an important election, and that underneath it all is a human tragedy, and I don't quite know what to make of it all, and I hear the arguments back and forth, but this is what the visitor seemed to say on that day. Headlines and the vicious troubles of my turbulent world push me to think and feel outside my comfort zone. I would rather stay with the home field advantage I clearly know, hoping that I have enough money and a tall enough emotional wall to keep the thoughts of blood and children hacked to death by tyranny away from me. I want to pursue my numbing life pursuits and refute my thoughts that we're getting things wrong. Give me the deaf ears and the loud, distracting song, but still today they are coming 2,000 miles away. He says he'll stop them at the border, sending in the army with its rough brand of law and order. He says they're criminals and killers out to undermine the manifest destiny of the empire divine. He says they have no place, these pathetic examples of the human race. But I see courage. I see guts and the hope of possibility blazing like judgment and a beacon before a man too fearful and too lazy to leave his home. They are coming, thousands strong, and they are the kind of people that an inward-looking empire will always need. Do not kill them at the golden door. Dare to welcome them and even let them lead. Tough stuff to have coming through you on a half a cup of coffee. Well, this morning we read about the literary creation called Job and about a mythical high priest in the letter to the Hebrews and about a blind beggar at the side of the road. Each of them awoke from a particular kind of blindness, and I asked myself, what did they see when they saw? Now, Job finally saw that he knew nothing. He had been a very popular man, says the writer. He had it all, class and status and kindness. He was a philanthropist. He was wealthy, lots of business interests. People loved him in his neighborhood, a paragon of virtue. And then, for a whole variety of reasons, every terrible thing we could imagine happening to us happened to him. And the whole thing collapsed. And when he came to himself after a long, long time getting to the end of the story, he realized he had but a few grains of sand in his hand slipping through his fingers and dropping seemingly without meaning onto a beach full of grains of sand. He knew nothing. As far back as he could look, beyond his lost children and the hopes and dreams, and beyond the generation that had brought him his wealth, and beyond that to the stories of the founding of his nation, and beyond that, a mystery. And looking forward to his hopes and dreams, many of them shattered, but thinking of those who would come after him, his friends and their children, and into the future and the way that might go and the way his holdings might continue to be invested down the years beyond that and beyond that, beyond that. A mystery. He knew nothing. And he didn't know about the deep intent of his friends. No one knows the deep intent of our friends. Are they going to turn on us at a given moment? Not to make us paranoid particularly, but really, when you see a friend sitting next to you, do you really know about that person? And do you know about your own actions and your own motivations, why you do what you do, why you feel what you feel? Why do you hate this so much? Why do you rage at that so much? Why is the sudden moment of joy something that overwhelms you and brings you to tears? I went to a wedding rehearsal the other night of people that I began to know, and as they were waiting, someone brought in a little girl. She must have been between 2 or 3, a little blonde girl who was going to be a junior bridesmaid, and they took off her big heavy boots, and they brought out a pair of silver slippers for her to wear, and I started to tear up. Silver slippers. And they slipped these little slippers on this little girl with utter fascination in her eyes. And I thought, Cinderella, right before my... And I thought, you are a complete idiot. You don't even know this child. But there I sat, overwhelmed with an archetypal picture of something that moved me to tears. Why do we do that? Now, when I ask about the Job in me, the risk of the Job in me, I realize... Well, I realize that I have a pulse, I can count on that. And I realize that I have a consciousness, I think I see you out there. And I realize that I have associates and I have acquaintances along the way, I value them. And I have a few significant others in my life whose gain is bounteous and whose loss would be catastrophic to me. And I realize that I have experiences and that I live in a flow, and I realize that I can get some things right and I can get some things wrong, and I realize that I've been a help to some people and, to my chagrin, I've been a hindrance to others. And I know that I'm going to die. All the rest of it is about hints and clues and speculation. Now, the story in Job says that at the end, when he realized that he knew nothing, he turned and prayed for his friends because he realized that underneath all their posturing and gesturing, they knew nothing either. We all simply know nothing. And in doing so, says the storyteller, a new chapter opened, a new way of being for Job and for all whom he met along the way. And the end of Job, to which William referred this morning, is a great ending, isn't it? It's like winning that Mega Billions lottery that was going on in the United States the other night. Billions of dollars to be won. A windfall for Job from a smiling God. Family and feasting restored, sympathy from those all round, wealth restored, bounty, far-flung commercial success again, he could build his global empire, intimacy in his marriage again, oh yes, a new family and a legacy down the years of pure gold. That was the gift in the story of Job. Now I ask you, does that satisfy? Now there must be something about it that appeals. We're all out there buying lottery tickets all the time, hoping that the multi-billion dollar winner across the border is related to us. We have the stamp on the letter already to send down and say, remember me. It feels like a security blanket to some sense, doesn't it? If I just have a bit of this and more of that, then I'll be all right from the wolves at the door. But something about it feels like premature surrender to me, something about it. On my highest days, I feel there must be more towards which we are pushing as human beings, as creatures living a single life in the world. After all, we bring nothing into the world and we take nothing out of the world. We are simply ourselves in the world. So to collect a whole bunch of things around us and to guard them with our lives seems potentially a bit foolish. So then I turn to this migrant caravan in my mind. What does Job see when he sees the migrant caravan, do you think? Well, he realized himself that God was with him in the dust and ashes of his life. That's the little part that isn't usually read. we concentrate on the glory and the gold and all the rest of it. But there is Job sitting with his wounds in sackcloth and ashes, and he sees God sitting with him in the silence. And the look in God's eyes says to him, no matter what happens to you, I will sit beside you in the ashes of your life. I will sit beside you. I will not leave you. And that's the real gift in the story of Job. So he sees a caravan of people sitting in dust and ashes. And he is able to say to them, quietly, I know that my Redeemer lives, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And although worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. Prosperity fades, fortune fades, says Job, but the children of God shall rise up on wings of eagles. Wishful thinking, do you think? Or perhaps the most profound statement in the history of human experience? Well, what did the high priest see in the letter to the Hebrews when he saw? As with any priest, he saw his own mortality, his own limits on his life. No rich robes or expansive liturgy is going to take away the fact that we are mortal. Priests rise and fall, he saw, each in turn, each living to champion or to discredit the great things within his hands. Each has an enormous task of mediating the truths of a living God to a culture who is hungry for it, or who is ignorant of it, or wants to abuse it in its own way. And I'm a priest, in a way. I'm a bridge between the sacred and the rest of the world. That is the calling to which I've been called. And so when I see a limited time. I have simply a limited time to do this, and as you know, the time for me to do it professionally is very, very limited. And I see a faltering of my will sometimes. Sometimes I want to go out and save the world. Sometimes I want to stay home and forget about the world, faltering of will. And sometimes I find a scattering of energy, and I live among a sea of unknowing, and I cannot achieve the goal of constant sunlight shining over green fields. That's just not in me to do. But this passage speaks of a greater high priest, one that can always be counted upon. It is a perfection that all priests turn towards in their best moments, and we see it now and then in our life, and when we see it, we remember it. Elspeth and I went to Ottawa, the capital city, in May for a few days just to see the beauty of it, and a beauty it is. And we stayed in the Grand Hotel right across from the War Memorial, and I would walk down several times in the day and stand by the great War Memorial of the nation. There are bronze soldiers on it, holding on to each other and wheeling their weapons into battle. And down below it on the dais is the simple grave of the unknown soldier. And coming up during daylight hours is a changing of the guard. Two guards stand, one on either side of the monument, absolutely stark still with their dark glasses and their hands on their rifles. And then on the hour, the sound of a lone bagpiper coming up the road, with three soldiers, two who will replace the guard. And then almost in a private ceremony among those intimately involved, the guard is changed and the new guards turn and stand, rock ribbed straight with the rifle at their side, dark sunglasses watching the crowd. They stand unmoving for an hour until they too are changed, rising to something, guarding something with their little lives that they can hardly name. You see it, and you know its greatness there and then. And I remembered that Captain Nathan Cirillo was shot down dead on that very site just a year or two before. He was 24 years old, a reservist soldier from Hamilton, Ontario, standing duty as was his honor, and he was shot mortally wounded by a fanatic on his way to the Parliament buildings. On that day, a lawyer from Ottawa, Barbara Walters, who was herself a naval reservist, was passing by and wanted to take a quick picture of the monument before she went to work. A shot rang out, the soldier fell, There was chaos and the rising sound of voices, shrieks and screams, no sound of first defenders yet. And she ran to Cirillo and knelt down, thinking to herself, I don't want this man to be surrounded in his last moments with shrieks and screams and terror. And I bent down and said to him, you are good, you are brave, you are loved. You are good, you are brave, you are loved. And the boy died. And that is the high priesthood and the gift to which we rise today. So when the high priest looks at the caravan, the one that's coming, he sees daring and valor and courage to engage the battle line. These so-called insurrectionists and warriors were shown on one of the news networks at a bridge in Mexico. There was a small rope ladder lowered down by two or three of them, and a woman was climbing down the ladder with her young baby in her arms, waiting to jump the 5 feet into a boat which would take her to the next fragile stop. Warriors, warriors, and insurgents all. I saw the great parade, as did the high priest, a determination to reach for the stars. And there in the midst of them is the great eternal high priest holding migrants everywhere in the world in his arms. The high priest hears the power of 2 Isaiah's poetry. Do not fear. I've redeemed you. I've called you by your name. You are mine. When you pass through the water, I'll be with you. When you walk through the fire, you'll not be burned, because I am the Lord your God, because you are precious in my sight. He sees tribes and families for which he models his priesthood. Love your neighbor as yourself, the prime directive in human life. Well, what did the blind man see when he saw? I was thinking he saw a shaft of color and a little bit of light breaking through, and he saw his childhood dreams being restored for the first time. At last I'm going to be able to stand up and sing and dance again, he said. And he saw his middle years of misery finally taken seriously. Someone actually sat beside him and said, I'm so sorry this has happened to you in your life. No one ever said that to him before. And he saw a future he didn't think he had. He'd gone from having sight to blindness, says Mark in his writing. He used to be able to see, and he lost his sight. Do you know how many of us used to be able to see and lost our sight? Children who are so bright in their innocence and infancy lose their ability to see as they grow into the hardness of the world. Adolescents fall in love, and their love is limitless until relationships break down and hearts are broken. And people in middle years stride out into their working life, seeing every possibility before them, until they hit a lousy work situation and a terrible boss, someone who breaks their spirits. And old people who had family and had dreams of being around them all the time find themselves suddenly alone, isolated in a room with tubes sticking out of their arms, wondering where their dreams disappeared. Well, it's a lot to see, isn't it? What did he see when he saw that migrant caravan coming, do you think? I think he saw people whose sight had been stolen, dreams stolen, young children with no milk, and young men with no work, and young women with no school, and the sick with no medication, and those who wanted peace with no peace. And they didn't do it to themselves. They were simply caught up in it, like so many people are easily caught up in it in our culture today. These were the blind calling out for their sight. Well, the caravan is coming. The caravans are coming all over the world. This is the great warning in the face of global warming and global pollution and the loss of arable land and the shrinking of coastlines and the changing of weather patterns. The issue is going to be the fact that the migrants are coming from all over the world, across the borders, all over the world, and the issue is going to be war or welcome. What are we going to do as a human family, war or welcome? Is it going to be borders? Or bounty, That's going to be the question. These folk have lost everything. Well, we're the church, and what do we see when we see? I hope we see the folly of those who laugh now in their plenty in the face of all our certain decline. I hope we see that and are humble enough to acknowledge that being on top doesn't last forever. And I hope we see the high priestly calling that demands times to be noble and truthful and daring when things get ugly and small. And I hope we see the need to witness to the shafts of light that we are being blessed to see, just little shafts of light that change our perception of the world. I was where you are, the church may say to any migrant, and by grace, you shall be where I am, we shall say to them. The blind man rose up and followed him along the way. There is no greater response necessary now than that. Our response to the caravan, to all the caravans, is a litmus test for our faith and for our simple humanity, a litmus test for it all. The caravan is coming. We say stop them at the border, sending in the propaganda with its rough brand of law and order. We say they might be criminals and killers out to undermine the manifest destiny of our empire divine. We say they have no place, these pathetic examples of losers, parasites on the human race, but I see courage, I see guts and the hope of possibility blazing like judgment, a beacon before a man too timid and too lazy to leave his home. They are coming, thousands strong, and they are us, the kind of people that an inward-looking empire will always need. Do not kill them at the golden door. Dare to welcome them. Do them right. They may even bring us back our sight.